Chapter 7, Prisoner in a Jar. The floorboards creaked gently as Kendra and Seth tiptoed down the stairs. Early morning light filtered through the closed blinds and drawn curtains. The house was still, the opposite of last night. Beneath their covers in the dark attic the night before, Kendra and Seth had found sleeping impossible as they listened to howling laughter, shattering glass, twittering flutes, slamming doors, and the constant din of shouted conversations. When they opened the door to sneak down and spy on the festivities, Lena was always seated at the foot of the attic stairs, reading a book.
"Go back to bed," she said each time they attempted a reconnaissance mission. "Your grandfather is still negotiating."
Eventually, Kendra fell asleep. She believed it was the silence that had finally awakened her in the morning. When she rolled out of bed, Seth arose as well. Now they were creeping down the stairs in hopes of glimpsing the aftermath of the night's revelry. The brass coat rack had toppled in the entry hall, surrounded by hooked triangles of broken glass. A painting lay face down on the floor, frame cracked. A primitive symbol was scrawled on the wall in orange chalk. They passed quietly into the living room. Tables and chairs had been overturned. Lampshades hung crooked and torn. Empty glasses, bottles, and plates lay scattered about, several of them cracked or broken. A ceramic pot lay in pieces around a pile of soil and the remnants of a plant. Food stains appeared at every turn, melted cheese caked into the carpeting, tomato sauce drying on the arm of a love seat, a squashed eclair oozing custard all over an ottoman. Grandpa Sorensen was snoring on the couch, using a curtain for a blanket. The curtain rod was still attached. He clutched a wooden scepter like a teddy bear. The strange staff was carved with vines twisting around the shaft and topped by a large pine cone. Despite all the commotion they had heard the night before, Grandpa was the only sign of life. Seth roamed off toward the study. Kendra was about to follow when she noticed an envelope on a table near her grandfather. A thick seal of crimson wax had been broken, and part of a folded paper protruded invitingly. Kendra glanced at Grandpa Sorensen. He was facing away from the letter and showed no sign of stirring. If he didn't want a letter read, he shouldn't leave it out in the open, right? It wasn't as if she were stealing it unopened from his mailbox. And she had several unanswered questions about Fablehaven, not the least of which concerned what was actually going on with her grandma. Kendra eased over to the table, a queasy feeling in her stomach. Maybe she should have Seth read it. Invading privacy wasn't really her forte. But it would be so simple. The letter was right in front of her, conveniently sticking out of the open envelope. Nobody would know. She tipped the envelope up and found there was no address or return address. The envelope was blank, hand-delivered. Had Maddox brought it? Probably. After a final glance to ensure Grandpa still looked comatose, Kendra slid the cream-colored paper out of the envelope and unfolded it. The message was written in bold script. "Stanley, I trust this missive finds you in good health. It has come to our attention that the SES has been exhibiting unusual activity in the northeast of the United States. We remain uncertain whether they have pinpointed the location of Fablehaven. But one unconfirmed report suggests they are in communication with an individual on your preserve. Mounting evidence implies the secret is out. I need not remind you about the attempted infiltration of a certain preserve in the interior of Brazil last year, nor the significance of that preserve in connection with the significance of yours. As you well know, we have not detected such aggressive activity from the SES in decades. We are preparing to reassign additional resources to your vicinity. As always, secrecy and misdirection remain top priorities. Be vigilant.
I continue to search diligently for a resolution to the situation with Ruth. Do not lose hope. With everlasting fidelity, S. Kendra reread the letter. Ruth was her grandma's name. What situation? S.E.S. had to be the Society of the Evening Star. What did the S at the end of the letter stand for? The entire message seemed a bit vague, probably deliberately.
Look at this,
Seth whispered from the kitchen. Kendra jumped, every muscle in her body tensing. Grandpa smacked his lips and shifted on the couch. Kendra stood temporarily immobilized by guilty panic. Seth was not looking at her. He was stooping over something in the kitchen. Grandpa became still again. Kendra folded the letter and slipped it back into the envelope, trying to situate it as she had found it. Moving stealthily, she joined Seth, who crouched over muddy hoof prints.
Were they riding horses in here?
He asked. It would explain the racket, she murmured, trying to sound casual. Lena appeared in the doorway, dressed in a bathrobe, hair awry.
Look at you early risers, she said softly. You caught us before cleanup.
Kendra stared at Lena, trying to keep her expression unreadable. The housekeeper showed no indication of having seen her spying at the letter. Seth pointed at the hoofprints.
What the heck happened?
The negotiations went well.
Is Maddox still here?
Seth asked hopefully. Lena shook her head.
He left in a taxi about an hour ago.
Grandpa Sorensen shuffled into the kitchen wearing boxers, socks, and an undershirt stained with brown mustard. He squinted at them.
What are you all doing up at this ungodly hour? It's after 7,
Seth said. Grandpa covered a yawn with his fist. He held the envelope in his other hand.
I'm feeling a little under the weather today. Might go lie down for a spell, as you were.
He shambled off, scratching his thigh.
You kids may want to play outside this morning, Lena said. Your grandfather was up until 40 minutes ago. He had a long night. I'm going to have a tough time taking Grandpa seriously when he tells us to show respect for the furniture, Kendra said. It looks like he drove a tractor through here.
Pulled by horses,
Seth added.
Maddox enjoys a celebration, and your grandfather is an accommodating host, Lena said. Without your grandmother here to rein in the merriment, things got a little too festive. Didn't help that they invited the satyrs.
She nodded at the muddy hoofprints. Satyrs? Kendra asked.
Like goatmen?
Lena nodded.
Some would say they liven up a party too much.
Those are goat prints?
Seth asked.
Satyr prints, yes.
Oh, I wish I could have seen them,
Seth mourned.
Your parents would be glad you didn't. Satyrs would only teach you bad manners. I think they invented them.
I'm sad we missed the party, Kendra said.
Don't be. It was not a party for young people. As caretaker, your grandfather would never drink, but I can't vouch for the satyrs. We'll have a proper party before you leave us.
Will you invite satyrs?
Seth asked.
Well, we'll see what your grandfather says,
Lena said doubtfully.
Maybe one.
Lena opened the refrigerator and poured 2 glasses of milk.
Drink your milk and then run along. I have some heavy cleaning ahead of me.
Kendra and Seth took their glasses. Lena opened the pantry, removing a broom and dustpan, and left the room. Kendra drank her milk in several deep swallows and set her empty glass on the counter.
Want to go for a swim? She asked.
I'll catch up,
Seth said. He still had milk in his cup. Kendra walked away. After finishing his milk, Seth peeked into the pantry. So many shelves packed with so much food. One shelf featured nothing but large jars of homemade preserves. Closer investigation revealed that the jars were lined up 3 deep. Seth backed out of the pantry and looked around. Re-entering the pantry, he removed a large jar of boysenberry preserves, pulling another jar forward from the second row to disguise the absence. They might miss a half-empty jar from the fridge, but one of many unopened jars from an overstuffed pantry? Not likely. He could be sneakier than Kendra knew. The fairy balanced on a twig protruding from a low hedge beside the pool. Arms extended to either side, she walked along the tiny limb, adjusting as it wobbled. The further out she got, the less stable she became. The miniature beauty queen had platinum hair, a silver dress, and glittering translucent wings. Seth sprang forward, slashing downward with a pool skimmer. The blue mesh struck the twig, but the fairy darted away at the last instant. She hovered, shaking a scolding finger at Seth. He swung the skimmer again, and the nimble fairy evaded capture a second time, soaring well out of range.
"You shouldn't do that," Kendra said from the pool.
"Why not? Maddox catches them."
"Out in the wild," Kendra corrected, "these already belong to Grandpa. It's like hunting lions at the zoo."
"Maybe hunting lions at the zoo would be good practice."
"You're going to end up making the fairies mad at you."
"They don't mind," he said,
creeping up on a fairy with wide, gauzy wings fluttering inches above a flower bed.
"They just fly away."
He slowly moved the pool skimmer into position. The fairy was directly beneath the mesh, less than 2 feet away from captivity.
With a flick of his wrist, he slapped the skimmer down sharply. The fairy dodged around it and glided off.
"What are you going to do if you catch one?"
"Probably let it go."
"So what's the point?"
"To see if I can do it."
Kendra boosted herself out of the water.
"Well, obviously you can't. They're too fast."
Dripping, she walked over to her towel.
"Oh my gosh, look at that one."
She pointed at the base of a blossoming bush.
"Where?"
"Right there. Wait until she moves. She's practically invisible."
He stared at the bush, unsure whether she was teasing him. A bobbing distortion began warping the leaves and blossoms.
"Whoa!
See? She's clear like glass."
Seth edged forward, clutching the pool skimmer.
"Seth, don't!"
Suddenly he charged, opting for a rapid assault this time. The transparent fairy flew away, vanishing against the sky.
"Why won't they hold still?"
"They're magic," Kendra said. "The fun is just looking at them, seeing all the variety."
"Real fun. Kind of like when Mom makes us go on drives to look at the leaves changing color."
"I want to grab some breakfast. I'm starving."
"Then go. Maybe I'll have better luck without you squawking."
Kendra walked to the house wrapped in her towel. She entered the back door and found Lena dragging a broken coffee table into the kitchen. Much of the surface of the table had been made of glass. Most of it was broken.
"Need a hand?" Kendra asked. "Mine are plenty."
Kendra went and grabbed the other end of the table. They set it in a corner of the spacious kitchen. Other broken objects rested there as well, including the jagged fragments of the ceramic pot Kendra had noticed earlier.
"Why pile everything here?"
"This is where the brownies come."
"Brownies?
Come look."
Lena led Kendra to the basement door, pointing out a second little door at the base, about the size a cat would use.
"The brownies have a special hatch that admits them to the basement, and they can use this door to enter the kitchen. They are the only magical creatures with permission to enter the house at will. The brownie portals are guarded by magic against all other creatures of the forest."
"Why let them in?"
"Oh, brownies are useful. They repair things. They make things. They are remarkable craftsmen."
"They'll fix the broken furniture?"
"Improve it if they can."
"Why?"
"It is their nature. They will accept no reward."
"How nice of them," Kendra said.
"In fact, tonight, remind me to leave out some cooking ingredients. By morning, they will have baked us a treat."
"What will they cook?"
"Oh, you never know. You don't make requests. You just leave out ingredients and see how they combine them."
"How fun!"
I'll leave out a bunch. No matter what strange combinations you leave, they always invent something delicious.
There is so much I don't know about Fablehaven, Kendra declared. How big is it?
The preserve stretches for many miles in some directions, much bigger than you would suppose.
And there are creatures throughout?
Through most of it, Lena said. But as your grandfather has warned you, some of those creatures can be deadly. There are many places on the property where even he does not dare venture.
I want to know more, all the details.
Be patient. Let it unfold.
She turned to the refrigerator and changed the subject.
You must be hungry.
A little.
I'll whip up some eggs. Will Seth want some?
Probably,
Kendra said, leaning against the counter.
I've been wondering, is everything from mythology true?
Explain what you mean.
Well, I've seen fairies and evidence of satyrs. Is it all real?
No mythology or religion that I know of holds all the answers. Most religions are based on truths, but they are also polluted by the philosophies and imaginations of men. I take it your question refers to Greek mythology. Is there a pantheon of petty gods who constantly bicker and interfere in the lives of mortals? I know of no such beings. Are there some true elements to those ancient stories and beliefs? Obviously, you're talking to a former naiad.
Scrambled?
What? The eggs.
Oh, sure.
Lena began cracking eggs into a pan.
Many of the beings who dwell here existed gracefully when primitive man foraged in ragged tribes. We taught man the secrets of bread and clay and fire. But man became blind to us over time. Interaction with mortals became rare. And then mankind began to crowd us. Explosions in population and technology stole many of our ancient homes. Mankind held no particular malice toward us. We had simply faded into colorful caricatures inhabiting myths and fables. There are quiet corners of the world where our kind continue to thrive in the wild, and yet the day will inevitably come when the only space remaining to us will be these sanctuaries, a precious gift from enlightened mortals.
It's so sad,
Kendra said.
Do not frown. My kind do not dwell on these concerns. They forget the fences and... Not frown. I should not speak of what used to be. With my fallen mind, I see the changes much more clearly than they do. I feel the loss more keenly.
Grandpa said a night is coming when all the creatures here will run wild.
Ah, Midsummer Eve, the festival night.
What's it like?
Oh, I'd better not say. I don't think your grandfather wants you kids worrying about it until the time comes. He would rather have scheduled your visit to avoid the festival night.
Kendra tried to sound nonchalant.
Will we be in danger?
Oh, now I've got you worried. You will be fine if you follow the instructions your grandfather gives you.
What about the Society of the Evening Star? Maddox sounded worried about them.
The Society of the Evening Star has always been a threat,
Lena admitted.
But these preserves have endured for centuries, some for millennia. Fablehaven is well protected, and your grandfather is no fool. You needn't worry about speculative rumors. I'll not say more on the subject. Cheese in your eggs?
Yes, please.
With Kendra gone, Seth got out the equipment he had bundled in his towel, including his emergency kit and the jar he had smuggled from the pantry. The jar was now empty, washed clean in the bathroom sink. Taking out his pocket knife, Seth used the awl to punch holes in the lid. Unscrewing the top, he gathered bits of grass, flower petals, a twig, and a pebble, and placed them in the jar. Then he wandered across the garden from the pool, leaving the skimmer behind. If skill failed,
he would resort to cunning. He found a good spot not far from a fountain, then took the small mirror from his cereal box and placed it in the jar. Setting the jar on a stone bench, he settled in the grass nearby, lid in hand. It did not take the fairies long. Several flitted around the fountain. A few drifted over, lazily orbiting the jar. After a couple of minutes, a small one with wings like a bee landed on the edge of the jar, staring into it. Apparently satisfied, she dropped inside and began admiring herself in the mirror. Soon she was joined by another, and another. Seth moved slowly closer until he was within reach of the jar. All the fairies exited it. He waited. Some flew off. New ones came. One entered the jar, followed quickly by two more. Seth pounced, slapping the lid onto the jar. The fairies were so quick, he expected to catch all three, but two whizzed out just before the lid covered the opening. The remaining fairy pushed against the lid with surprising force. He screwed it shut. The fairy inside stood no taller than his little finger. She had fiery red hair and iridescent dragonfly wings. The incensed fairy pounded her tiny fist noiselessly against the wall of the jar. All around him, Seth heard the tinkling of miniature bells. The other fairies were pointing and laughing. The fairy in the jar beat against the glass even harder, but to no avail. Seth had captured his prize. Grandpa dipped the wand into the bottle and raised it to his lips. As he blew gently, several bubbles streamed from the plastic circle. The bubbles floated across the porch.
"You never know what will fascinate them," he said, "but bubbles usually do the trick."
Grandpa sat in a large wicker rocker. Kendra, Seth, and Dale sat nearby. The setting sun streaked the horizon with red and purple.
"I try not to bring unnecessary technology onto the property," he continued, dipping the wand again. "I just can't resist with bubbles."
He blew, and more bubbles took shape. A fairy, glowing softly in the fading light, approached one of the bubbles. After considering it for a moment, she touched it, and the bubble turned bright green. Another touch, and it was an inky blue. Another, and it was gold. Grandpa kept the bubbles coming, and more fairies came to the porch. Soon all the bubbles were changing colors. The hues became more luminous as the fairies competed against one another. Bubbles ruptured with flashes of light. One fairy gathered bubbles until she had assembled a bouquet that resembled a bunch of multicolored grapes. Another fairy entered a bubble and inflated it from the inside until it tripled in size and burst with a violet flash. A bubble near Kendra appeared to be full of winking fireflies. One near Grandpa turned to ice, fell to the porch, and shattered. The fairies flocked near Grandpa, eager for the next bubbles. He kept them coming, and the fairies continued to display their creativity. They filled bubbles with shimmering mist. They linked them in chains. They transformed them into balls of fire. The surface of one reflected like a mirror. Another took on the shape of a pyramid. Another crackled with electricity. When Grandpa put the bubble solution away, the fairies gradually dispersed. The dwindling sunset was almost gone. A few fairies played among the chimes, making soft music.
"Unbeknownst to most of the family," Grandpa said, "a few of your cousins have visited me here. None of them came close to figuring out what is really going on."
"Didn't you give them clues?" Kendra asked.
"No more or less than I gave you. They were not of the proper mindset." "Was it Erin?" Seth asked. "She's a goober." "You be kind," Grandpa scolded. "What I want to say is that I admire how you children have taken all of this in stride. You have adapted impressively to this unusual place." "Lena said we could have a party with the goat people,"
Seth said.
"I wouldn't hold my breath if I were you. Why was she talking about satyrs?"
"We found hoofprints in the kitchen," Kendra said.
"Things got a bit out of hand last night,
Grandpa admitted.
Trust me, Seth, consorting with satyrs is the last thing a boy your age needs. Then why did you do it?
Seth asked.
A visit from a fairy broker is a significant event, and carries certain expectations. I'll concede that the merriment borders on foolishness. Can I try blowing bubbles?
Seth asked.
Another night. I'm planning a special excursion for you tomorrow. In the afternoon, I need to visit the granary, and I mean to take you with me. Let you see more of the property. Will we get to see something besides fairies?
Seth asked.
Probably.
I'm glad, Kendra said. I want to see everything you're willing to show us.
All in due time, my dear.
From her breathing, Seth was pretty sure Kendra was asleep. He sat up slowly. She did not move. He coughed weakly. She did not twitch. He eased out of bed and crossed the attic floor to his dresser. Quietly, he opened the third drawer down. There she was, twig, grass, pebble, flower petals, mirror, and all. In the dark room, her inherent glimmer illuminated the entire drawer. Her tiny hands were splayed against the wall of the jar, and she looked up at him desperately. She chirped something in a twittering language, motioning for him to open the lid. Seth glanced over his shoulder. Kendra had not budged.
"Good night, little fairy," he whispered. "Don't worry. I'll feed you some milk in the morning."
He began shutting the drawer. The panicked fairy redoubled her frantic protestations. It looked like she was about to cry, which made Seth pause. Maybe he would let her go tomorrow.
"It's okay, little fairy," he said gently. "Go to sleep. I'll see you in the morning."
She clasped her hands together and shook them in a pleading motion, begging with her eyes. She was so pretty, that fiery red hair against the creamy skin. The perfect pet. Way better than a hen. What chicken could set bubbles on fire? Closing the drawer, he returned to his bed. Chapter 8. Retaliation. Seth wiped sleep from the corner of his eye and stared at the ceiling for a moment. Rolling over, he saw that Kendra was not in her bed. Daylight streamed through the window. He stretched, arching his back with a groan. The mattress felt inviting. Maybe he could get up later. No, he wanted to check on the fairy. He hoped some sleep had calmed her. Kicking off the tangled covers, Seth hurried over to the dresser. Pulling it open, he gasped. The fairy was gone. In her place was a hairy tarantula with striped legs and shiny black eyes. Had it eaten her? He checked the lid. It was still on tight. Then it registered that he had not consumed any milk yet. This could be the other form the fairy appeared in. He would have expected a dragonfly, but supposed a tarantula was possible. He also noticed that the mirror in the jar was broken. Had she smashed it with the pebble? It seemed like a good way to cut herself.
"No roughhousing," he scolded. I'll be right back."
A round loaf of bread sat on the table, a mottled mixture of white, black, brown, and orange. While Lena sliced it, Kendra took another sip of hot chocolate.
"Considering all the ingredients I left out, I thought they might make a jumble pie," Lena said. "But calico loaves are equally delicious. Try a piece."
She handed Kendra a slice.
"They did a great job on the pot," Kendra said. "And the table looks perfect."
"Better than before," Lena agreed. "I like the new beveling. Brownies know their business."
Kendra inspected the slice of bread. The strange coloring continued all the way through, not just on the crust. She took a bite.
Cinnamon and sugar dominated the flavoring. Eagerly, she took another. It tasted like blackberry jam. The next tasted like chocolate with a hint of peanut butter. The following bite seemed saturated with vanilla pudding. It has so many flavors, and they never clash like they should, Lena said, taking a bite herself. Feet bare, hair sticking up, Seth trotted into the room.
Good morning,
he said.
Having breakfast?
You have to try this calico bread, Kendra said.
In a minute, he replied. Can I have a cup of hot chocolate?
Lena filled a mug.
Thank you,
he said as she handed it to him.
I'll be right back. I forgot something upstairs.
He hurried off, drinking from the mug.
He's so weird,
Kendra said, taking a bite of what now tasted like banana nut bread.
Up to some mischief, if you ask me, Lena replied.
Seth set the mug on the dresser. Taking a calming breath, he silently prayed that the tarantula would be gone and the fairy would be there. He slid the drawer open. A hideous little creature glared up from inside the jar. Bearing pointy teeth, it hissed at him. Covered in brown, leathery skin, it stood taller than his middle finger. It was bald, with tattered ears, a narrow chest, a pot belly, and shriveled, spindly limbs. The lips were frog-like, the eyes a glossy black, the nose a pair of slits above the mouth.
What did you do to the fairy?
Seth asked. The ugly creature hissed again, turning around. It had a pair of nubs above the bony shoulder blades. The nubs wiggled like the remnants of amputated wings.
Oh, no! What happened to you?
The creature stuck out a long black tongue and slapped the glass with calloused hands. It jabbered something in a foul, raspy language. What had happened? Why had the beautiful fairy mutated into a revolting little devil? Maybe some milk would help. Seth snatched the jar from the drawer, grabbed the mug from the dresser, and bolted down the stairs from the attic to the hall. He dashed into the bathroom, locking the door behind him. The mug was still a third full. Holding the jar over the sink, he poured some of the hot chocolate onto the lid. Most ran down the side of the jar, but a little dripped through the holes in the top. One drop plopped on the creature's shoulder. It angrily motioned for Seth to unscrew the lid and then pointed at the cup. Apparently, it wanted to drink straight from the mug. Seth examined the room. The window was shut, the door locked. He wadded a towel against the space at the bottom of the door. Inside the jar, the creature made pleading motions and pantomimed drinking from a cup. Seth unscrewed the lid. With a powerful leap, the creature jumped out, landing on the counter. Crouching, snarling, it glared at Seth.
I'm sorry your wings fell off, he said. This might help.
He held the mug out toward the creature, wondering if it would sip the flavored milk or just climb inside the cup. Instead, it snapped at him, barely missing his finger. Seth jerked his hand away, sloshing hot chocolate onto the counter. Hissing, the agile creature dropped to the floor, raced over to the bathtub, and vaulted inside. Before Seth could react, the creature squirmed down the drain. A final garbled burst of complaints issued from the dark hole, and then the creature was gone. Seth poured the remnants of the hot chocolate into the drain in case it could be of use to the deformed fairy. He looked back at the jar, empty now except for a few wilting flower petals. He was not sure what he had done wrong, but he doubted Maddox would be very proud. Later that morning, Seth sat in the treehouse trying to find puzzle pieces that fit together. Now that the perimeter was finished, adding pieces was a challenge. They all looked the same. He had avoided Kendra all morning. He did not feel like talking to anybody. He could not get over how foul the fairy had become. He was not sure what he had done, but he knew it was somehow his fault, some accidental consequence of catching the fairy. That was why she had been so frightened the night before. She knew he had doomed her to change into an ugly little monster. The puzzle pieces started to vibrate. Soon the whole treehouse was trembling. Were they having an earthquake? He had never been in an earthquake before. Seth ran to the window. Fairies hovered everywhere, gathered in the air all around the treehouse. Their arms were raised, and they seemed to be chanting. One of the fairies pointed at Seth. Several glided closer to the window. One held her palm out in his direction. With a flash of light, the window pane shattered. Seth jumped away from the window as several fairies flew in. He ran to the hatch, but the treehouse lurched so violently that he fell to the floor. The shaking was becoming intense. The floor was no longer level. A chair tipped over. The door to the hatch had slammed shut. He crawled toward it. Something hot stung the back of his neck. Multicolored lights began flashing. Seth grabbed the door to the hatch, but it would not open. He tugged hard. Something seared the back of his hand. Panicked, he returned to the window, struggling to keep his balance as the floor quaked beneath him. The flock of fairies continued to chant. He could hear their little voices. With a loud crack, the treehouse suddenly tilted sideways. The view out the window switched from the fairies to the rapidly approaching ground. Seth experienced a momentary sensation of weightlessness. Every object in the treehouse was floating as everything plummeted together. Puzzle pieces filled the air, and then the treehouse imploded. Kendra smeared a sunblock across her arms, disliking the greasy feel of the lotion against her skin. She was tanner than when she had first arrived, but the sun was hot today, and she did not want to take any chances. Her shadow was a small puddle at her feet. It was almost noon, lunch was not far off, and then Grandpa Sorensen would take them to the granary. Kendra quietly hoped she would see a unicorn. Suddenly, she heard a tremendous crash from the corner of the yard. Then she heard Seth screaming. What could have made such a huge noise? She did not have to run far in order to see the broken pile of rubble at the base of the tree. Seth was sprinting toward her. His shirt was torn. He had blood on his face. Scores of fairies appeared to be in pursuit. Her initial thought was to make a joke about the fairies wanting revenge for him trying to catch them, until she realized it was probably true. Had the fairies thrown down the treehouse?
"They're after me!"
he yelled.
"Jump in the pool!" Kendra called.
Seth swerved in the direction of the pool and began pulling off his shirt. The ominous cloud of fairies had no trouble keeping up with him. They hurled sparkling streams of glitter. Casting his shirt aside, Seth sprang into the water.
"The fairies are after Seth!"
Kendra cried, watching in horrified dismay. The fairies hovered over the pool. After a few moments, Seth surfaced. In flawless synchronization, the cloud of fairies swooped, diving toward him. He yelled as blazing rays of light began flaring around him and ducked underwater again. The fairies plunged in after him. He came to the surface, gasping. The water churned. Seth floundered at the center of an underwater pyrotechnics display. Kendra rushed to the edge of the pool.
"Help!"
he cried, raising a hand out of the water. The fingers were fused together like a flipper. Kendra screamed.
"They're attacking Seth! Help! Somebody! They're attacking Seth!"
He flailed toward the side of the pool. The roiling mass of fairies converged on Seth again, hauling him to the bottom of the pool amid eerie bursts of light. Kendra ran and seized the pool skimmer, swinging it at the relentless horde of fairies, never touching any of them no matter how dense the swarm appeared. Seth resurfaced at the edge of the pool and threw his arms up onto the flagstones, trying to drag himself out of the water. Kendra stooped to assist him, but shrieked instead. One arm was broad, flat, and rubbery. No elbow, no hand. A flipper coated in human skin. The other was long and boneless, a fleshy tentacle with limp fingers at the end. She looked at his face, long tusks curved down from a wide, lipless mouth. Patches of hair were missing. His eyes were glazed with terror. The frenzied fairies mobbed him again, and he lost his grip on the side, vanishing in another pulsing succession of colored flashes. Steam sizzled up from the seething water.
"What is the meaning of this?"
Grandpa Sorensen hollered, hustling to the edge of the pool. Lena followed behind him. The water in the pool flickered a few more times. Many of the fairies whizzed away. A few flew over to Grandpa. One fairy in particular chirped angrily. She had short blue hair and silvery wings.
"He did what?" Grandpa said.
An unrecognizable monstrosity heaved itself out of the water and lay panting on the flagstones. The deformed creature had no clothes. Lena crouched beside him, placing a hand on his side.
"He had no idea that would happen," Grandpa complained. "It was innocent."
The fairy twittered her disapproval. Kendra gaped at the freakish form of her brother. Most of his hair had fallen out, revealing a lumpy scalp stippled with moles. His face was broader and flatter, with sunken eyes and tusks the size of bananas protruding from his mouth. A misshapen hump swelled high above his shoulders. On his back below the hump, four blowholes puckered for air. His legs had united into a single crude tail. He slapped the ground with his flipper arm. The tentacle writhed like a snake.
"An unlucky coincidence," Grandpa said consolingly. "Most unfortunate. Can't you have mercy on the boy?"
The fairy chirped vehemently.
"I'm sorry you feel that way. I feel terrible about what happened. I assure you the atrocity was unintentional."
After a final outburst of squealing sounds, the fairies zoomed away.
"Are you okay?"
Kendra said, squatting beside Seth. He made a garbled moan, then a second, more distressed complaint that sounded like a donkey gargling mouthwash.
"Hush, Seth," Grandpa said. "You've lost the ability of speech."
"I'll fetch Dale," Lena said, hurrying off.
"What have they done to him?" Kendra asked.
"An act of vengeance,"
Grandpa said grimly.
"For trying to catch fairies?"
"For succeeding."
"He caught one?"
"He did."
"So they turned him into a deformed walrus? I thought they couldn't use magic against us."
"He used potent magic to transform the captured fairy into an imp, unwittingly opening the door for magical retribution."
"But Seth doesn't know any magic."
"I'm sure it was accidental," Grandpa said. "Can you understand me, Seth? Slap your flipper 3 times if you grasp what I'm saying."
The flipper flapped against the flagstones 3 times.
"It was very foolish to catch a fairy, Seth,"
Grandpa said.
"I warned you they were unsafe, but I share some of the blame. I'm sure you were inspired by Maddox and wanted to begin a career as a fairy broker."
Seth nodded awkwardly, his entire bloated torso bobbing up and down.
"I should have specifically forbidden it. I forget how curious and daring children can be, and how resourceful. I would never have supposed you were capable of actually trapping one."
"What magic did he use?"
Kendra asked, on the verge of hysterics.
"If a captured fairy is kept indoors from sunset to sunrise, it changes into an imp."
"What's an imp?"
"A fallen fairy. Nasty little creatures. Imps despise themselves as much as fairies adore themselves. Just as fairies are drawn to beauty, imps are drawn to ugliness."
"Their personalities change so quickly?"
"Their personalities remain the same,
Grandpa said. Shallow and self-absorbed. The change in appearance reveals the tragic side of that mindset. Vanity curdles into misery. They become spiteful and jealous, wallowing in wretchedness.
What about the fairies Maddox caught? Why don't they change?
He avoids leaving the cages indoors overnight. His captured fairies spend at least part of every night outdoors.
Just putting the container outside prevents them from becoming imps?
Sometimes, powerful magic is accomplished by simple means.
Why did the other fairies attack Seth? Why would they care if they're so selfish?
They care because they are selfish. Each fairy worries she could be next. I am told Seth even left a mirror with the fairy so she could behold herself after she fell. The fairies consider that act particularly cruel.
Grandpa answered every question with great calm, no matter how accusingly or angrily Kendra asked it. His peaceful demeanor was helping her calm down a bit.
I'm sure it was an accident, she said.
Seth nodded vigorously, blubber jiggling.
I suspect no malice. It was an unfortunate mishap, but the fairies have little interest in his motives. They were within their rights to exact retribution.
You can switch him back.
Restoring Seth to his original form is well beyond my abilities.
Seth let out a long, mournful bellow. Kendra patted his hump.
We have to do something.
Yes, Grandpa said.
He placed his hands over his eyes and then dragged them down his face.
This would be very complicated to explain to your parents.
Who can fix him? Maddox?
Maddox is no magician. Besides, he is long gone. Though I hesitate, I can think of only one person who might be able to undo the enchantments placed on your brother.
Who?
Seth has met her.
The witch?
Grandpa nodded.
Under the circumstances, our only hope is Muriel Taggart.
The wheelbarrow swayed as it bumped over a root. Dale managed to steady it. Seth groaned. He was naked except for a white towel wrapped around his middle.
Sorry, Seth, Dale said. This is a tricky path.
Are we almost there?
Kendra asked.
Not much farther,
Grandpa replied. They walked single file, Grandpa in the lead, followed by Dale pushing the wheelbarrow, and then Kendra in the rear. What had begun as a nearly indiscernible trail near the barn had broadened into a well-trodden path. Later, they branched off onto a smaller track. They had crossed no new path since then.
The woods seem so quiet, Kendra said.
They are the quietest when you stay on the paths,
Grandpa said.
It seems too quiet.
There is a tension in the air. Your brother committed a serious offense. The fall of a fairy is a woeful tragedy. The retribution of the fairies was equally brutal. Eager eyes await to see if the conflict will escalate.
It won't, right?
I hope not. If Muriel cures your brother, the fairies could interpret it as an insult.
Would they attack him again?
Probably not. At least not directly. The punishment has been administered.
Can we heal the fairy?
Grandpa shook his head.
No.
Could the witch?
Seth was altered by magic imposed upon him, but the potential to fall and become an imp is a fundamental aspect of being a fairy. She transformed in accordance to a law that has existed as long as fairies have had wings. Muriel might be able to undo the enchantments forced upon Seth. Reversing the fall of a fairy would be far beyond her capacity.
Poor fairy,
Kendra said. They reached a fork in the path. Grandpa turned left.
Almost there, he said. Keep silent as we converse with her.
Kendra stared at the bushes and trees, expecting to find spiteful eyes glaring back at her. What creatures would come into view if all the greenery were removed? What would happen if she raced off the path? How long before some gruesome monster devoured her? Grandpa stopped, pointing away into the trees.
Here we are.
Kendra saw the leafy shack in the distance, off the path through the trees.
Too much undergrowth for the wheelbarrow, Dale said, scooping Seth into his arms.
Although Seth was much more blubbery, he had not increased in size. As they waded through the undergrowth, Dale carried him without much difficulty. The ivy-shrouded shack drew near. They walked around to the front. The filthy witch sat inside, her back against the tree stump, chewing on a knot in a bristly rope. A pair of imps sat on the tree stump. One was skinny, with prominent ribs and long, flat feet. The other was compact and plump.
"Hello, Muriel," Grandpa said.
The imps sprang from the trunk and scurried out of sight. Muriel looked up, a slow grin revealing decayed teeth.
"Could that be Stan Sorensen?"
She rubbed her eyes theatrically and squinted at him.
"No, I must be dreaming. Stan Sorensen said he would never visit me again."
"I need your help," Grandpa said.
"And you brought company. I remember Dale. Who is this fine young lady?"
"My granddaughter."
"Oh, she got none of your looks. Lucky for her. My name is Muriel, dear. Pleased to meet you."
"I'm Kendra."
"Yes, of course. You have that lovely pink nightgown with the bow on the bosom."
Kendra shot a look at Grandpa. How could this crazy witch know about her pajamas?
"Oh, I know a thing or two," Muriel continued, tapping her temple. "Telescopes are for stars, dear, not for trees."
"Pay her no heed," Grandpa said. "She wants to give you the impression that she has power to spy on you in your bedroom. Witches prey on fear. Her influence does not extend beyond the walls of this shack."
"Won't you step inside for some tea?"
she offered.
"What news she has comes from imps," Grandpa continued. "And since imps are banned from the yard, her news came from a particular imp."
Muriel let out a shrieking laugh. The crazed cackle suited her haggard appearance much better than her speaking voice did.
"The imp saw your room and heard conversations from wherever Seth stashed it,"
Grandpa concluded.
"Nothing to fret about."
Muriel raised a finger in objection.
"Nothing to fret about, you say?"
"Nothing the imp saw or heard could be harmful,"
Grandpa clarified.
"Except perhaps her own reflection,"
Muriel suggested.
"Who is our final visitor? This poor lumpy abomination. Could it be?"
She clapped her hands and giggled.
"Did our stalwart adventurer have a mishap? Did his clever tongue finally betray him?"
"You know what happened,"
Grandpa said.
"Ah, I do,
she cackled.
"I knew he was insolent, but never suspected such cruelty. Lock him in a shed, I say, for the sake of the fairies. Lock him up tight."
"Can you restore him?"
Grandpa asked.
"Restore him?"
the witch exclaimed.
"After what he did?"
"It was an accident, as you are aware."
"Why not ask me to rescue a killer from the noose, to spare a traitor from his shame?"
"Can you do it?"
"Shall I conjure up a medal for him to wear as well? A badge of honor for his crime?"
"Can you?"
Muriel dropped the act. She regarded her visitors with a sly expression.
"You know the price."
"I can't loosen a knot,"
Grandpa said. Muriel tossed up her gnarled hands.
"You know I need the energy from the knot for the spell,"
she said,
He has more than 70 separate hexes operating on him. You ought to untie 70 knots.
What about...
No dickering. One knot, and your beastly grandson will be restored to his original form. Without the knot, I would never be able to counter the enchantment. This is fairy magic. You knew the price before you came. No dickering.
Grandpa sagged.
Show me the rope.
Lay the boy at my threshold.
Dale placed Seth in front of the door. Standing in the doorway, Muriel held the rope out to Grandpa. There were two knots. Both had dried blood on them. One was still moist with saliva.
Take your pick, she said.
Of my own free will, I sever this knot,
Grandpa said. Leaning forward, he blew gently on the higher of the two knots. It unraveled. The air trembled. On hot days, Kendra had seen the air shimmer in the distance. This was similar, but right in front of her. She felt pulsing vibrations, like she was standing in front of a powerful stereo speaker during a song with lots of bass. The ground seemed to be tipping. Muriel extended a hand over Seth. She mumbled an unintelligible incantation. His blubber rippled as if he were boiling inside. It looked like thousands of worms were under his skin, squirming to find a way out. Putrid vapor fumed up from his flesh. His fat appeared to be evaporating. His misshapen body convulsed. Kendra extended her arms and swayed as the ground teetered even more. There was a burst of darkness, an anti-flash, and Kendra stumbled, barely catching herself. The odd sensation ended. The air cleared and balance returned. Seth sat up. He looked exactly like his old self. No tusks, no flippers, no blowholes. Just an 11-year-old kid with a towel wrapped around his waist. He scrambled away from the shack and got to his feet.
Satisfied?
Muriel asked.
How do you feel, Seth?
Grandpa inquired. Seth patted his bare chest.
I feel better.
Muriel grinned.
Thank you, little adventurer. You did me a great service today. I am indebted.
You shouldn't have done it, Grandpa,
Seth said.
Had to be done, he said. We best be going.
Stay a while,
Muriel offered.
No thanks,
Grandpa said.
Very well. Spurn my hospitality. Kendra, nice to meet you. May you find less happiness than you deserve. Dale, you are as mute as your brother and nearly as pale. Seth, please have another mishap soon. Stan, you lack the wit of an orangutan. Bless your soul. Do not be strangers.
Kendra gave Seth socks, shoes, shorts, and a shirt. Once he put them on, they returned to the path.
Can I ride in the wheelbarrow on the way back?
Seth asked.
Huh, you ought to push me,
Dale grumbled.
How did it feel being a walrus?
Kendra asked.
Is that what I was? A mutant humpbacked walrus with a deformed tail,
she clarified.
I wish we had a camera. It was weird breathing through my back, and it was hard to move. Nothing felt right. Might be safer not to converse so loudly,
Grandpa said.
I couldn't talk,
Seth said more quietly.
I felt like I still knew how, but the words came out all tangled. My mouth and tongue were different.
What about Muriel?
Kendra asked.
If she unties that last knot, will she be free?
She was originally bound by 13 knots,
Grandpa said.
She can loosen none on her own, though it doesn't seem to stop her from trying. But other mortals can undo the knots by asking a favor and blowing on them. Powerful magic holds the knot in place. When released, Muriel can channel that magic into granting the favor.
So, if you ever need her help again?
I will look elsewhere,
Grandpa said.
I never wanted her to get down to a single knot. Freeing her is not an option. I'm sorry I ended up helping her,
Seth said.
Did you learn anything from the ordeal?
Grandpa asked. Seth lowered his head.
I feel really bad about the fairy. She didn't deserve what happened to her.
Grandpa made no response, and Seth kept studying his shoes.
I shouldn't have messed around with magical creatures,
he finally admitted. Grandpa placed a hand on his shoulder.
I know you meant no harm. Around here, what you don't know can hurt you and others. If you have learned to be more careful and compassionate in the future, and to show greater respect for the inhabitants of this preserve, then at least some good came of all this.
I learned something too, Kendra said. Humans and walruses should never mix.
Chapter 9. Hugo. The triangular wooden board rested on Kendra's lap. She studied the pegs, planning her next jump. Beside her, Lena gently tilted back and forth on a rocker, watching the moon rise. From the porch, only a few fairies could be seen gliding around the garden. Fireflies twinkled among them in the silver moonlight.
Not many fairies out tonight, Kendra said.
It may be some time before the fairies return in force to our gardens, Lena said.
Can't you explain everything to them?
Lena chuckled.
They would listen to your grandfather before they would ever heed me.
Weren't you sort of one of them?
That is the problem. Watch.
Lena closed her eyes and began to sing softly. Her high, trilling voice gave life to a wistful melody. Several fairies darted over from the garden, hovering around her in a loose semicircle, interrupting the warbling tune with fervent chirping. Lena quit singing and said something in an unintelligible language. The fairies chirped back. Lena made a final remark, and the fairies flew away.
What were they saying? Kendra asked.
They told me I should be ashamed to sing a naiadic tune, Lena replied. They detest reminders that I was once a nymph, especially if those reminders imply that I am at peace with my decision.
They acted pretty upset.
Much of their time is spent mocking mortals. Any time one of us crosses over to mortality, it makes the others wonder what they might be missing, especially if we appear content. They ridicule me mercilessly.
You don't let it get to you?
Not really. They do know how to needle me. They tease me about growing old, my hair, my wrinkles. They ask how I will enjoy being buried in a box.
Lena frowned, gazing thoughtfully into the night.
I felt my age today when you called for help.
What do you mean?
Kendra jumped a peg on the triangular wooden board.
I tried to rush to your aid, but ended up sprawled on the kitchen floor. Your grandfather reached your side before I did, and he is no athlete.
It wasn't your fault.
In my youth, I would have been there in a flash. I used to be handy in an emergency. Now I come hobbling to the rescue.
You still get around great.
Kendra was running out of moves. She had already stranded a peg. Lena shook her head.
I would not last a minute on the trapeze or the tightrope. Once I played on them with agility, the curse of mortality. You spend the first portion of your life learning, growing stronger, more capable, and then, through no fault of your own, your body begins to fail, you regress. Strong limbs become feeble, keen senses grow dull, hardy constitutions deteriorate. Beauty withers, organs quit,
you remember yourself in your prime and wonder where that person went. As your wisdom and experience are peaking, your traitorous body becomes a prison. Kendra had no moves left on her perforated board. 3 pegs remained. I never thought of it that way. Lena took the board from Kendra and began setting up the pegs. In their youth, mortals behave more like nymphs. Adulthood seems impossibly distant, let alone the enfeeblement of old age. But ponderously, inevitably, it overtakes you. I find it a frustrating, humbling, infuriating experience. When we talked before, you said you would not change your decision, Kendra reminded her. True. Given the opportunity, I would choose Patton every time. And now that I have experienced mortality, I do not imagine I could be content with my former life. But the pleasures of mortality, the thrills of living, come with a price. Pain, illness, the decline of age, the loss of loved ones, those things I could do without. The pegs were set up. Lena began jumping them. I am impressed by how glibly most mortals confront the debilitation of the body. Patton, your grandparents, many others, they just accept it. I have always feared aging. The inevitability of it haunts me. Ever since I abandoned the pond, the prospect of death has been a menacing shadow in the back of my mind. She jumped the final peg, leaving only one. Kendra had seen her do it before, but had not yet succeeded in copying her moves. Lena sighed softly. Because of my nature, I may have to endure old age for decades longer than regular human beings. The humiliating finale to the mortal condition. At least you're a peg-jumping genius, Kendra said. Lena smiled. The solace of my winter years. You can still paint and cook and do all sorts of things. I do not mean to complain. These are not problems to share with young minds. It's okay. You aren't scaring me. You're right. I can't really picture being grown up. Part of me wonders if high school will ever really happen. Sometimes I think maybe I'll die young. The door to the house opened, and Grandpa's head poked out.
Kendra, I need to have some words with you and Seth.
Okay, Grandpa.
Come to the study.
Lena stood, motioning for Kendra to hurry along. Kendra entered the house and followed Grandpa into the study. Seth was already seated in one of the oversized chairs, drumming his fingers on the armrest. Kendra claimed the other one while Grandpa settled in behind his desk.
The day after tomorrow is June 21st, Grandpa said. Do either of you know the significance of that date?
Kendra and Seth shared a glance.
Your birthday?
Seth attempted.
The summer solstice, Grandpa said. The longest day of the year. The night before is a holiday of riotous abandon for the whimsical creatures of Fablehaven. 4 nights a year, the boundaries that define where different entities can venture dissolve. These nights of revelry are essential to maintaining the segregation that normally prevails here. On Midsummer Eve, the only limits to where any creature can roam and work mischief are the walls of this house. Unless invited, they cannot enter.
Midsummer Eve is tomorrow night?
Seth said.
I did not want to leave you time to fret over it. As long as you obey my instructions, the night will pass without incident. It will be loud, but you will be safe.
What other days do they run wild? Kendra asked.
The winter solstice and the 2 equinoxes. Midsummer Eve tends to be the rowdiest of them all.
Can we watch out the windows?
Seth asked eagerly.
No, Grandpa said. Nor would you enjoy what you saw. On the festival nights, nightmares take shape and prowl the yard,
ancient entities of supreme evil patrol the darkness in search of prey. You will be in bed at sundown. You will wear earplugs, and you will not arise until sunrise dispels the horrors of the night.
Should we sleep in your room? Kendra asked.
The attic playroom is the safest place in the house. Extra protections have been placed on it as a sanctuary for children. Even if, by some misfortune, unsavory creatures entered the house, your room would remain secure.
Has anything ever gotten into the house? Kendra asked.
Nothing unwanted has breached these homestead walls,
Grandpa said.
Still, we can never be too careful. Tomorrow, you will help prepare some defenses to afford us an extra layer of protection. Because of the recent uproar with the fairies, I fear this could be a particularly chaotic Midsummer Eve. Has anyone ever died here?
Seth asked.
On this property, I mean? We should save that topic for another time,
Grandpa said, standing up.
That one guy changed into dandelion seeds,
Kendra said.
Anybody else?
Seth insisted. Grandpa regarded them soberly for a moment.
As you are learning, these preserves are hazardous places. Accidents have occurred in the past. Those accidents generally happen to people who venture where they do not belong or tamper with matters beyond their understanding. If you adhere to my rules, you should have nothing to worry about.
Kendra used a hacksaw to separate another pumpkin from the vine. Further down the long trough of soil, Lena was cutting a large red one. Nearly half the greenhouse was devoted to pumpkins, big and small, white, yellow, orange, red, and green. They had arrived at the greenhouse by a faint trail through the woods. Aside from the pumpkins and plants, the glass structure contained a generator to power the lights and the climate control.
We really have to cut 300?
Kendra asked.
Just be glad you don't have to load them,
Lena said.
Who does?
It's a surprise.
Are jack-o'-lanterns really such a big deal?
Do they work? Quite well, especially if we can convince fairies to fill them.
With magic?
To dwell in them for the night,
explained Lena.
Fairy lanterns have long been among the surest protection from creatures with dubious intentions.
But I thought the house was already safe.
Kendra began sawing the stem of a tall orange pumpkin.
Redundancies in security are wise on festival nights, particularly on a Midsummer Eve after all the recent commotion.
How will we ever carve all of them before tonight?
Leave that to Dale. He could carve them all himself with time to spare. Not always the most artful renderings, but the man can mass-produce. You carve only for fun. He knows how to carve for need.
I've never liked pulling out the guts,
said Kendra.
Really? Lena said. I love the slimy texture, getting greasy up to my elbows, like playing in the mud. We'll have delicious pies afterwards.
Is this white one too small?
Maybe save it for autumn.
Do you think the fairies will come?
Hard to say, Lena admitted. Some, for sure. Normally, we have no trouble filling as many lanterns as we care to carve, but tonight might be an exception.
What if they don't show up?
Kendra asked.
We'll be fine. Artificial lighting works, just not as well as fairies. With the fairy lanterns, the commotion stays farther from the house. In addition, Stan will be putting out tribal masks, herbs, and other safeguards.
Is the night really so awful?
Oh, you'll hear plenty of disturbing sounds.
Maybe we should have skipped the milk this morning.
Lena shook her head, not lifting her eyes from her work.
Some of the most insidious tricks employed tonight will involve artifice and illusion. Without the milk, you could be even more susceptible. It would only broaden their ability to mask their true appearance.
Kendra severed another pumpkin.
Either way,
I won't be looking. I wish we could transplant some of your common sense to your brother. After all that's happened, I'm sure he'll behave tonight. The door to the greenhouse opened, and Dale poked his head in.
Kendra, come here. I want you to meet somebody.
Kendra walked to the door with Lena behind her. In the doorway, Kendra paused and let out a small shriek. A bulky creature with a simian build was marching toward the greenhouse, pulling a rickshaw-type contraption the size of a wagon.
"He's Hugo!" Seth crowed from inside the handcart. "He's a robot made of dirt!"
He jumped out of the cart and ran over to Kendra.
"I ran ahead so you could see him approach," Dale said.
"Hugo can run really fast when you tell him to," Seth gushed. "Dale let me give him orders and he obeyed everything I said. See? He's waiting for instructions."
Hugo stood motionless beside the greenhouse, still holding the rickshaw. Had she not just seen Hugo moving, Kendra would have assumed he was a crude statue. Seth shouldered past Kendra into the greenhouse.
"What is he?" Kendra asked Lena.
"A golem," she replied. "Animated matter granted rudimentary intelligence. He does most of the heavy labor around here. He's loading the pumpkins and rolling them to the house in his cart."
Seth exited the greenhouse toting a fairly large pumpkin.
"Can I show her a command?" he asked.
"Sure," Dale said.
"Hugo, obey the next command from Seth." Holding the pumpkin at his waist with both hands, leaning back a bit to stay balanced, Seth approached the golem.
"Hugo, take this pumpkin and throw it as far as you can into the woods."
The inert golem sprang to life. Grasping the pumpkin in one massive hand, he twisted and then fiercely uncoiled, hurling the pumpkin into the sky like a discus. Dale whistled softly as the pumpkin shrank into the distance, finally dropping out of sight, an orange speck vanishing behind far-off treetops.
"Did you see that?" Seth cried. "He's better than a water balloon launcher."
"Regular catapult," Dale murmured.
"Very impressive," Lena agreed dryly. "Forgive me if I hope to put a few of our pumpkins to more practical use. You boys come help us cut the rest of our harvest so we can get them loaded."
"Can Hugo do a few more tricks?" Seth begged. "He knows cartwheels."
"There will be time for nonsense later," Lena assured him. "We need to finish our preparations for this evening."